Welcome to Unique Connections at the Table. I'm Dr. Beverly Samways, and each episode we invite you to join the conversation and discover new ways of seeing the world, particularly in relation to those with learning disabilities. So pull up a chair, the table's set, and we're so glad you're here. Hi, Jen.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, we are right in the middle of World Autism Acceptance Month, which is exciting.
Hey. What a great month.
Yeah, good month. And definitely moved from, we used to talk a lot more about autism awareness. Mm-hmm. It feels like if you're not aware of autism now, like, where have you been? Mm-hmm. So now we are talking about acceptance rather than awareness, mm-hmm. Which just seems like progress.
Mm-hmm. It also feels, though, that I haven't seen it publicised a lot.
Well, it depends which echo chamber you're existing in, I think.
Yes, that's fair. I guess I'm on quite a lot of parenting type things.
Okay.
But I may well not be on the same parenting things where it would be advertised a lot.
Yeah. So I my like threads on Instagram particularly are absolutely full of stuff to do with autism and empowerment and autonomy and all those kinds of things.
So you're probably a lot more aware of it than I was.
Yeah, it definitely feels quite out there this year. It
feels quite exciting.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's good. Yeah, it definitely is. And I think because we've, you know, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but they changed the diagnostic criteria, which means that significantly more women and significantly more people who can articulate themselves easily are now being diagnosed with autism. So I guess there's more people who can talk about it, who can share their experience, and who can describe how it is for them to have mm-hmm. autism. So that's because, of course, that's one of the tensions of that is we now have such a range of people with essentially the same diagnosis, and yeah. Some of whom have no verbal communication, and it's much more difficult, not impossible, but more difficult for them to express their experiences. So, yeah, interesting times.
It is. And what have you seen people talking about it, about kind of this month? What have you seen come up?
Probably because of the threads that I'm on, I've seen more people talking about like how people with autism or learning disability are supported in social care settings, or maybe who have a personal assistant who comes into the house and helps them. I've seen lots of threads around that, just around like good practice. So I just this morning I watched a reel. It was called Autonomy by, mm-hmm. I can't remember what they're called. Anyway, they're good guys, and it was a personal assistant essentially saying to the person that he was supporting, like, right, it's time to do this, and it's time to do this. And the person he was supporting was wandering off and just going at the pace that he wanted to get. So he was like, oh, it's time for us to sit down and write your weekly schedule. And the guy went and made a cup of tea. It was really nice. It was like really gentle. And it was that sense of like why? So what they were challenging is like, why does the PA get to set the time schedule and how and when things happen? Why can't it just go at the pace of the person they're supporting? So it's really, yeah, it was like, it was nice.
It feels like that is so much more bigger, so much more representative of something that we're in as a culture generally.
Yeah.
That sort of, I have these tasks and I have to get them done despite the fact that my body or my mind might be saying that I need something else, that sort of thing. Yeah. So a bit like, okay, I need to go to Aldi, I need to go and do a food shop. Actually, what I want to do is go and sit down, but something tells me, no, this has to be done. And it's really interesting then when we put that onto somebody else.
Yeah.
So our own belief of these jobs have to be done, so they're going to be done in this order, in this way. Whereas I guess so much of my hope of a PA is that they are able to be led and guided by the person that they are the personal assistant of, that kind of putting aside, here is my agenda, here are the things that I want to do and I need to do.
Yeah, it's complex, isn't it? And I think where it gets, so this is one of the things we wanted to talk about today, wasn't it? This idea of empowerment. So one of the principles of trauma-informed care is this idea of empowerment and choice. And some people put voice in there as well, so that the person has a voice. I think one of the things that really makes this complex is that one of the first things, you know, if we're training someone up to come and work with somebody with learning disabilities and autism, one of the first things that we might say to them is like, this person needs the world to be predictable. They need to have, you know, a sense of routine and rhythm in their life that they can rely on. And one of the things I was really conscious of, particularly last year with one of the services that we were working with, was that that was becoming like that sense of like predictability, rhythm, routine was almost becoming a crutch for the staff and not particularly useful for the young people. And like, if that's true, how do we make space for spontaneity? And for the fact that it's still possible as a someone with autism to want to change the schedule, to want to do something spontaneous and to do something based on relationship, not based on rhythm. And I think it was really interesting for me to see that begin to shift. So actually, even in this reel that was really good, he was still sitting down and saying, let's sit down and write your weekly schedule. And something inside me just like, resists that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because I, like, personally, I would hate to have a weekly schedule. I would hate for someone to tell me, you know, on Wednesday you'll do your shopping and on Thursday you'll go to the cinema and on Friday. I would really hate that. And even if I was in control of writing that, I would hate that. And there, of course, there would be some people, both with and without autism, who would really love that. But I'm not convinced that everybody with autism and learning disability wants to live that way. I'm just not convinced.
And it then becomes such like an othering problem, doesn't it? Well, they have this diagnosis and therefore this is absolutely what it is that they will want, rather than also looking at themselves and going, is this also what I would want?
Yeah. And I was talking to a manager yesterday and we were talking about, you know, there was some stuff that came up about choice and they're in a fairly big service. And he said, well, everybody has a weekly schedule. And I said, how do you know that everybody wants a weekly schedule? Maybe they want a daily schedule. Maybe they want a monthly schedule, or maybe they want no schedule. Why does everybody with autism and learning disability want the week plan? Like, why do they want a 7-day plan? It feels like we give everybody choice by planning 7 days ahead. It's like, do we get a choice as to whether we plan 7 days ahead? I just...
Absolutely.
It's always interesting to me how the traits or the stereotype traits of autism, so this need for, and like, don't get me wrong, some people definitely like need that schedule and would really, really benefit from that, but how the assumption that everybody wants that gets into the system and you're almost like the service begins to present itself as autistic, like, well, we as a service have to have a 7-day plan. We will have a meltdown if we don't have it.
Yeah. If there's a change to the, absolutely.
Yeah. And I remember one of the things that was so lovely that I began to see materialise in one of the services last year was there was a young lady who was able, so she didn't have loads of verbal communication, but she did have some. And of course she had staff that she really loved to hang out with and staff that she'd take it or leave it and staff that she didn't particularly want to hang out with. And like, aren't we just all like that with people in our lives? But there were times when she'd come home from school and just out of the blue, she'd say, I want to go. She'd say cinema with, and she'd say like a favourite member of staff who was on shift. And what I really loved was that the staff began to like come to the team leader or come to me if I was on there and say like, she's just asked, could she go to the cinema? And I know it's not the plan. I know it's not on the schedule. And I know that we'd have to move things around to do it. But could they just get on the bus and go to the cinema? And like, just, I loved that the staff wanted to make it happen. And I loved that we could say yes. And so she would often just, she'd come home from school. But sometimes, what I also found fascinating is sometimes we'd put the same plan in place for her. So same staff member, same, you know, maybe next week we'd say, well, she loves going to the cinema with you. The cinema, and she'd come home from school, we'd say, oh, you know, Jane's going to take you to the cinema. And she'd be like, I don't want to go today, I'm tired. I want to get him up in Starbucks.
But it's so interesting, isn't it, that you go, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We are trusting you that you know what you want. We are trusting you that actually it's totally okay. It doesn't do anything to me if you choose something different. I am absolutely fine with handing over that power for you to manage how you spend your time in your day.
Yeah, that's it.
But it feels so interesting, doesn't it? Because otherwise we're going, well, I know right. I absolutely know that you do love the cinema. Let me persuade you that you really do want to go. It's going to be a rubbish experience for both of us because you don't want to come. But yeah, I'm going to work really, really hard at doing this.
Yeah, so you're right about that. There's something, isn't there? When we talk about empowerment, it's a, like, we have to think about what's happening because there is a, it's a transfer of power from one to another, isn't it? If I'm empowering you, I am giving you the power that I could have otherwise held on to. And I think that starts to become an interesting thought because firstly, we then have to accept that. So, you know, for a team to empowering this young lady to go to the cinema because she asked it, they have to give up some of their power to set the schedule for the evening. But we also then have to acknowledge that they had the power in the first place.
Yes. And then it gets messy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Messy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are avoidant of thinking of about power in the care in services and in a care sector because it feels uncomfortable to us. But actually, there's a power imbalance between people who, who live in social care settings and those who work there, and that's that they get those that work there get to say yes and no, and when they get to choose and decide whether they give up power or whether they keep a hold of it. And sometimes there's some really good, you hear staff who are struggling to give up power, they'll come up with some really convincing arguments. Like, you know, one of the classic arguments in this, if we stick with this young lady who likes to go to the cinema when she feels like it, would be the idea that, well, what if she comes home and she asks to go to the cinema and we can't make it happen? We've had somebody call in sick, we can't staff, it's not safe. What then? Somehow she's going to believe that if we say yes once, we can always say yes to her. And so then you know, the answer to that apparently is that we just always say no in case there's an occasion when we don't say no.
Yes.
Which is a bizarre concept that to protect your future self in the moment when you say no, that we always say no. And what if we just trusted her that she could tolerate the disappointment of somebody saying,
but if we do that, we have to also trust ourselves that we're okay with a no.
Yeah, I think so. And also trust that, like, let's assume that there does have to be a no. And she's really upset that she cries, that she gets cross, that she, you know, throws something across the room. Like, is that, like, are we going to be okay with that? Like, and did we do that?
Yes. And how does this fit into we want happy children?
Yeah, absolutely. Where is it? Maybe it's an opportunity for her to, to be disappointed and for us to work through that with her. Because can we protect her from, can we create a life for her where she never experiences disappointment?
Well, no. Can we help name it and navigate it when it happens? Yes.
Yeah. And I guess that's that emotional side of things, isn't it? That what world are we bringing and are trying to create for young people with learning disabilities and autism? Well, it is an ordinary life with ordinary disappointments and ordinary letdowns and yeses and nos when we least expect it. And the other thing I think was interesting about seeing this begin to play out with them and the way that this was facilitated for her was the level of joy that it created, not just for her, but actually for everybody.
Because they got to say yes.
They got to say yes. And they would come back and, you know, she would be really excited. And she would, you know, she usually be tired as well, but she'd had a good time. But usually the staff member was like full up with the experience. They were really like, she had an amazing time, I'm so glad we said yes, like she did this, she did that, she did the other, she was, and you could see that. And then the joy would spread for the team, like even those that hadn't been there, just hearing the story and knowing that they had been part of an evening in which a young person experienced the joy of being heard, being listened, and being given the power to make a choice. Like, it really was contagious.
I think also that contagious bit means that we say yes the next time. Yeah. Or we trust somebody with what it is that they're saying. We empower them next time. And that's important, isn't it? That it doesn't just stay just with that young person or in that moment. but it feels like the basics. It really reminds me, though, of the place we talked about a few weeks ago, where the young person was accompanied by two very strong sort of body protection security minders with them. And how very far away that is from empowerment.
Yeah, that's really true. It's not even in the ballpark, is it? It's like there's no empowerment available when you're being supported by two people wearing body armor.
You can't kind of go, yes, that's fine, I'll hand you some of this power.
No.
Because as soon as you decide, not only the other person won't be able to cope with it, but the other person will be dangerous whether or not they're given a choice in something, whether or not they're listened to, they are just by the fact that they exist, they are dangerous and cannot be trusted. Then we start responding from that place instead. It feels so sad.
Yeah, it's really true. Yeah. And I think the other thing that's interesting about this empowerment piece is like, what is it that enables staff members to hand power to the person they're supporting? Like, what facilitates that? And of course, if you have a team that is stressed or burnt out or exhausted, like I was even thinking from my own perspective, the days when I felt like that in a care setting, and somebody comes and says, and it feels like they've thrown a spanner in the works, you know, somebody comes and says, could you, this young man, go and do this thing that we've never tried? And like, you just want to say no. You just like, no, I've got no energy for that. I've got no space in my mind to accommodate this like brand new idea. I can't move things. Everything's tight. Everything's full. I haven't got enough space to try something, to experiment, to take the risk that something might go wrong or something might not pay off. But what enables us to hand power over is when we feel like we're safe, like, because it's a risk, isn't it? It's a risk to hand power over. So we have to feel safe enough to take the risk, to say, yeah, okay, let's try that. Let's see how it goes. And we believe that we're big enough if there's future consequences for it, or it causes us trouble later down the line.
I think the other side of saying yes is the non-empowerment side, but it's the fear side.
Yeah.
So the idea of, I will say yes to anything that is asked of me because I want you to like me. Or I am fearful that if I say no, then what's going to happen? So that young person we talked about asked to go to the cinema. If I say yes, and I'm doing it solely to go, okay, well, I'm worried about what's going to happen if I say no.
Yeah.
Or I'm saying yes, just because then I might become the favorite person for her spending time with.
Yeah.
All of those kind of things. I think that's when it stops being empowerment and starts being more and more about us instead, because it becomes that transaction of I am only doing this because it makes me believe that my life will be easier.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel more powerful and more in control because there's a transaction there. If I say yes to you saying, can I come to the cinema? Then I feel really good because I feel powerful because you're like me.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Jen. That is a it's
complicated then, isn't it?
Yeah, because it can look the same.
Yeah. And I think that's when we have to come back to what you've just said around what is the room we have inside ourselves? Yeah. What is that space we have to go, me saying yes to this is me empowering this person, but it doesn't change me and it doesn't change who I am. Future me will manage the consequences of this, but saying yes is solely about being able to trust that the other person knows themselves and knows what it is that they want. Mm. Just the same as offering to that young person and her saying, no, actually, I don't want to go to the cinema. Mm. It's trusting that's okay, because I can trust her to know what it is that she wants about herself. And she feels empowered. It's not about me, but it's about them.
So it's so interesting, isn't it? Because what our motives are for saying yes or no really changes the interaction. I'm thinking of a conversation I had just recently. I'm going to change some of the details. So it was a young lady who'd had a lot of really complicated traumatic experiences in her past. And when she felt really, really scared, she would run to the hospital because this is one place that she had consistently felt safe. And I was talking with one of the team members about it, and they were saying, you know, they were essentially using like what behavioral reinforcements can we use to prevent this from happening, or from, you know, because it's not safe. And we were just sort of unpicking that and thinking about what was happening there. And you're right, there's a few ways to go with that. Firstly, you could just let them run to the hospital because to stop her would potentially cause conflict, drama. And so like just as you say, you're saying yes because you're scared to say no. And that's still a holding of power. But what we actually ended up talking about was that this is a young person who is existing in a trauma state. And this was a bid for safety. So, you know, we know that when people are traumatized, they seek safety. And so regardless of the fact that this was inconvenient and this was potentially dangerous because she was crossing roads and all the rest of it, the instinct to run to a safe place where there were safe people, where people had consistently been kind to her, was fundamentally a good thing and was coming out of a desire for safety. And so actually to find ways to facilitate that, sort of almost to tolerate it, to find a way for the system to be able to tolerate this happening and to safely facilitate it to happen, to acknowledge to her, we think it's a good thing that you want to be in a safe place. Let's now think about creating some other safe places where you could also run to. And we were talking as well about the fact that this was a safe place was because there was repeat experiences of safety and rescue in terms of the hospital service and the emergency team there. And so how can we find other spaces where she repeatedly experiences safety and rescue potentially, where she then has a range of places. But the power that you have to give up to allow her to take, and also to acknowledge that this is an attempt to heal. This is her attempt to heal from feeling desperately unsafe. And so we have to find a way to facilitate and to allow that if we can. And we even began to talk about like just road safety training, and she likes to be on a bike as well, so you know, bike safety, and like how can we help her to run to a safe place safely and to just actually just let that happen. And understand that it's a trauma recovery process rather than a behaviour or, you know, attention seeking or all the other things that was...
Yeah, because then it suddenly becomes recoverable again, rather than this is a behaviour that's going to be here forever.
Yeah.
It's a behaviour that we have to stop.
Yeah, and of all the flipping places a child could run to...
Yeah, right.
You just think that's all right, you know, she's not running to a estranged parent or to, you know, to some friends that are involved in dodgy stuff, or she's running to a hospital, like, great. But it required that shift in mindset requires, like, just as you were saying before, like the team to feel big enough to say, this isn't what we want. This is suboptimal to have a child racing to the hospital in the middle of school or when they're at home.
Yeah.
But can we acknowledge that this is the best the child can do at the moment and it's a bid for safety? So can we empower them to do that as safely as possible and then create some other spaces where she can also run to? But that's, you know, that's wildly inconvenient, to put it mildly, to facilitate a child to operate like that. And that requires a giving over of power and a shift in mindset as to what that child is doing.
So we began by talking about Autism Acceptance Month.
Yeah.
I was thinking then around when we think about empowerment in these moments and acceptance and recovery from trauma, we're also thinking about it from a space of a little bit more distance. So we're thinking about the teams that are supporting young people. And we're thinking about school staff that are supporting young people. But one of the parts in like the tagline of World Autism Acceptance Month is around our families as well. And it's made me think around just the importance of working out as a family what this looks like in practice.
Yeah.
The importance of recognizing, saying yes, and a level of empowerment to one grandchild doesn't then mean that there has to be a yes to everybody else as well. That there has to be that kind of recognition of individual
the
recognition of this is what it is that works for this person, but also that permission that then comes for everybody else in the family as well.
That's a really good point. I think actually of my friend Emma with this, with the way she runs a large like children's ministry in a church, and they have a lot of children with additional needs, many with autism. And they, when they, you know, when it's time for the children to sit down and listen, the children with autism are allowed to walk around at the back. They're allowed to hold their favourite item. They're allowed to stay on the move. And there was, and she often gets questions from other people running children's groups, or like that's not fair. How do you explain to, like, have, won't all the children want to get up and move around? Won't all the children, like, it's not fair that they should be able to do it and others can't. Mm. And she is so gifted and so well thought through at teaching the children about difference. And so she was, you know, if one of the children starts walking around and she says, sit down, and they say, but what about him? He's walking around. He's been walking around for the last 20 minutes. She'll say, he has different needs. He's not the same as you. He needs to move his body in a way that you don't need to move your body. We're not all the same. And I love how she does it. She trains all of the children to understand that fairness is not sameness. And that everybody needs different things, and we have to respect that. It's created a really open space where the children are incredibly accepting of each other and accepting of different needs, and accepting of, and like, even I've been there, and there'll be a young person who's really vocalizing all the way through, or like sometimes they have a young person who's going through a little bit of a stage, and they're like, you know, clambering on the stage and playing the drums and grabbing the mic, and they're all over the absolute chaos, and the children just, they don't feel that, they don't get annoyed, they don't feel the need to intervene, they don't feel the need to rescue, they just let the one-to-one work it out, and they can still concentrate because they've understood that there's difference, and they really have accepted that some people have different needs and some people need different boundaries. And it's okay. But yeah, I think that's right. In order to accept, we have to also accept that we're not all the same. We don't all have the same needs, and therefore we don't all need the same boundaries. Now, we all need boundaries.
Yeah.
So no one can live in a boundaryless world and feel safe. Boundaries are how we feel safe, but they can shift from one person to the next.
Maybe we'll spend some time on another episode thinking about boundaries in the future.
A helpful
sort of space to be able to think, well, what do our own boundaries tell us about things?
Yeah.
If we have quite dodgy boundaries for ourselves, is it then more difficult for us to empower anybody else?
Yeah, I think particularly within a trauma lens, it's really, really important to acknowledge that. Yeah, it'd be good to pick that up. Nice one. Thanks,
Jen.
See you again.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening today. Before you go, can you help us with something? We want to make sure these conversations reach the people who need to hear them. So if there's someone you think would benefit from listening to this, we would just love it if you shared it. See you next time.